Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Imagine living in a cubicle larger than some people's closets for all those years, and you finally are able to walk out of there. For me, it was unbelievable that this was actually happening to me. But I mean, the feeling of wow, I can go wow and wow, I'll be home.
In a Democracy Now! Global TV radio broadcast exclusive, we spend the hour with longtime Indigenous leader Leonard Peltier. In February, he was released from federal prison in Florida after nearly 50 years behind bars for a crime he says he did not commit. President Biden, on his final day in office, commuted Peltier's sentence to home confinement. We'll speak to Leonard Peltier about his life of resistance, from attending an Indian boarding school as a child to his years with AIM, the American Indian Movement, to his life in prison.
What really kept me strong was my anger. I was extremely angry about what they did to me and my people.
We go to Leonard Peltier on his 81st birthday on the Turtle Mountain Reservation in Belcourt, North Dakota, for the hour. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli forces continue to advance deeper into Gaza City, forcing tens of thousands of Palestinians onto coastal roads away from the city center. Malnourished children and critically ill patients are among those displaced, ordered to go south as Israel seeks to seize Gaza City. Speaking to Al Jazeera, Palestinians recount nonstop strikes with the Israeli military blowing up entire neighborhoods. The World Health Organization warns hospitals are on the brink of collapse. Israeli soldiers have killed at least 21 Palestinians since dawn. This is Zahar Kfarna, of displaced Palestinian mother.
They threw leaflets on us and told us to leave. Now there's no place for me to go to. I don't have a tent or anything. As you can see, we have been walking for 4 days. We're in the street now. No tent, no shelter, nothing. I ask all relevant parties to support us, help us. We are tired. We're really tired.
Meanwhile, the United States vetoed a draft UN Security Council resolution yesterday that called for an immediate, unconditional, and permanent ceasefire in Gaza. It was approved by 14 of the Council's 15 member states. It was the sixth time the U.S. cast a vote since the start of Israel's war on cast a veto since the start of Israel's war on Gaza. Meanwhile, Israel's far-right minister Bezalel Smotrich on Wednesday called the Gaza Strip a real estate bonanza and said, quote, a business plan is on President Trump's table. He also added, quote, we've done the demolition phase, now we need to build, unquote. A delivery driver transporting humanitarian aid from Jordan to Gaza Thursday opened fire on Israeli soldiers, killing at least two in the Allenby crossing into the occupied West Bank. The assailant, a civilian who'd reportedly been delivering aid to Gaza for the past 3 months, was then shot dead by Israeli forces. Afghanistan has rejected President Trump's calls for the United States to retake control of Bagram Air Base. Trump made the comments on Thursday during a press conference with British Prime Minister Keir Starmer.
We're going to keep Bagram, the big air base, that one of the biggest air bases in the world. We gave it to him for nothing. We're trying to get it back, by the way. Okay, that could be a little breaking news. We're trying to get it back because they need things from us. We want that base back. But one of the reasons we want the base is, as you know, it's an hour away from where China makes its nuclear weapons.
On social media, Zakir Jalal, an Afghan foreign ministry official, said, quote, Afghanistan and the United States need to engage with one another without the United States maintaining any military presence in any part of Afghanistan, unquote. President Trump's escalating his attacks on the press by threatening to revoke the broadcast licenses of networks that give him negative coverage. Trump's comment came a day after ABC indefinitely suspended Jimmy Kimmel's late-night program following threats from Federal Communications Commission Chair Brendan Carr over remarks Kimmel made after the assassination of Charlie Kirk. The Trump administration's actions have been widely denounced. Fellow late-night host Stephen Colbert called the suspension of Kimmel's show blatant censorship. On The Daily Show, Jon Stewart mockingly described himself as the patriotically obedient host of what he called the all-new government-approved Daily Show.
The point is, our great administration has laid out very clear rules on free speech. Now, some naysayers may argue that this administration's speech concerns are merely a cynical ploy, a thin gruel of a ruse, a smokescreen to obscure an unprecedented consolidation of power and unitary intimidation, principleless and coldly antithetical to any experiment in a constitutional republic governance. Some people would say that. Not me, though. I think it's great.
Meanwhile, congressional Democrats denounced the Trump administration's threats and introduced a bill to strengthen protections for people targeted over political speech. This is Democratic Congressmember Greg Kassar of Texas.
We are in the biggest free speech crisis this country has faced since the McCarthy era. The murder of Charlie Kirk was a horrific crime, and it's clear that Trump wants to hijack that horrific crime to silence anyone who disagrees with the president about any issue.
President Trump's asked the Supreme Court for an emergency order to remove Lisa Cook from the Federal Reserve Board of Governors. An appeals court earlier this week rejected the unseating of Cook ahead of the Federal Reserve's vote to lower interest rates. Trump's attempt to fire Cook is the first time a president has tried to remove a current federal governor in the agency's 112-year history. She's also the first African-American woman to serve on the board in history. In New York, at least 11 Democratic elected officials were arrested Thursday as they demanded access to the notorious ICE jail inside 26 Federal Plaza in Manhattan, while a separate group staged a peaceful action blocking access to the building's garage used by ICE to transport detained immigrants. City Controller Brad Lander and public advocate Jumaane Williams were among those arrested yesterday. In related news, a new report has found ICE placed more than 10,000 people in solitary confinement between April 2024 and May 2025, with the practice skyrocketing after Trump returned to office. Immigrants, including those experiencing serious medical and mental health crises, are routinely placed in isolation for days, weeks, and in some cases months, which the UN says amounts to torture. A federal judge in Washington, D.C. has blocked the Trump administration from immediately deporting a group of at least 76 unaccompanied Guatemalan migrant children who were living in government custody. Judge Timothy Kelly, who's a Trump appointee, rejected claims by the Department of Homeland Security that the children were being deported to be reunited with their parents who had asked for their return to Guatemala. In his ruling, Kelly said the administration's argument, quote, crumbled like a house of cards, as there is no evidence before the court that the parents of these children sought their return, he said. Trump officials had attempted to secretly deport the children in the middle of the night over Labor Day weekend. A vaccine advisory panel at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention voted to restrict access to the MMRV vaccine, which is a combination shot that protects against measles, mumps, rubella, and chickenpox, to children under the age of four. About half the panel's members were appointed by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. The panelists are also set to vote today on COVID-19 shots and whether to delay administering the hepatitis B vaccine to newborns. Meanwhile, New York, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey have formed a Northeastern bloc to issue broader vaccine recommendations than the CDC. New York Governor Kathy Hochul said in a statement, quote, as Washington continues to launch its misguided attacks on science, New York's making it clear that every resident will have access to the COVID vaccine and the health care they rely on, unquote. Venezuela has launched a series of military drills mobilizing more than 2,500 soldiers to the Caribbean island of La Orchila in response to soaring tensions with the Trump administration over U.S. military attacks and presence in the region. U.S. forces have blown up at least two Venezuelan boats, killing at least 14 people that Trump officials, without providing evidence, claimed were drug traffickers. U.N. experts have condemned the U.S. for carrying out extrajudicial executions. The escalating U.S. military action against Venezuela comes after Trump signed a secret directive approving the Pentagon's use of military force in Latin America, supposedly to target drug cartels. And in France, hundreds of thousands of protesters took part in demonstrations as labor unions went on strike against austerity measures proposed by French President Emmanuel Macron and his new prime minister, Sébastien Lecornu. According to France's interior ministry, 500,000 people attended the protests. Here's Régis Delu, a helicopter worker for Airbus.
The government needs to understand that we are fed up with austerity, that there are real measures that need to be taken to save France. But these aren't the ones that need to be taken against workers. These are measures that need to be taken at the government level and savings that need to be made.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In a Democracy Now! Global TV radio broadcast exclusive, we spend the hour with longtime indigenous activist Leonard Peltier. In February, he was released from a federal prison in Florida after spending nearly half a century behind bars for a crime he says he did not commit. President Biden, on his last day in office, commuted Peltier's life sentence to home confinement. Biden's decision came after mounting calls by tribal leaders and supporters around the world in a decades-long community-led campaign fighting for his freedom. In the 70s, Peltier was involved with AIM, the American Indian Movement. In 1975, two FBI agents and one young AIM activist were killed in a shootout on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. Two AIM members were later arrested for killing the agents. At trial, the jury acquitted them. Leonard Peltier was arrested later, tried separately, and convicted. Peltier has always maintained his innocence. Notable supporters of Leonard Peltier over the years included Nelson Mandela, Pope Francis, and Amnesty International. Supporters of Peltier say his trial was marked by gross FBI and federal prosecutorial misconduct, including the coercion of witnesses, fabricated testimony, and suppressed exculpatory evidence. After being released in February, Leonard Peltier returned home to live on the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Reservation in Belcourt, North Dakota. September 12th was Leonard Peltier's 81st birthday. People gathered throughout the day visiting him to celebrate this first birthday in almost a half a century where he was home. We got there on his birthday, the next day, Saturday. We spoke in his living room, in his first extended TV radio broadcast interview since his release from prison. Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, in the home of Leonard Peltier, just recently freed from prison after 49 years.
Plus two months.
I have spoken to you so many times, Leonard, in prison, in various prisons, several of them supermax prisons. It is quite astonishing to be here with you in person. Tell us where we are. Where are we sitting?
We're sitting in my home that was given to me by my supporters. This was not given to me by the tribe or the government, had nothing to do with it. I was released by Biden under commutation of my sentence and home confinement. Actually, what happened was I was taken out of one prison cell and really put into another type of prison. But this is my home now. This is my home. So. It's a million times better.
Wait, what do you mean when you say you were taken out of your prison cell after more than 49 years, mm-hmm. and you're saying that you're not completely free?
No. I'm on very restrictive restrictions. Even to go to the post office, I got to call my handler. I have to call her to go to the post office. Then when I get back, I have to call her and tell her I'm back. Or if I go anything, if I go shopping or whatever, I have to do that. If I have to go 100 miles past the nation, I don't call my place a reservation either. It's where nations of people. I have to get a pass, usually from Washington, D.C., to go to the medical, usually medical or religious ceremonies on different Native nations.
So let's go back to that moment when you were in that prison cell in Coleman in Florida, and you got word that President Biden had commuted your sentence. It was just hours before he was leaving office. Can you tell us about that process, how it took place?
Well, as I went through the years filing for pardons and stuff, Ronald Reagan was the first one to promise to leave me, pardon me. Somebody in Washington stopped it. There's only one organization that could have stopped it and didn't have the power to stop it, but still somehow are in power enough to where they can override the President of the United States, our Congress. It's the FBI. And Reagan promised to let me go. And the FBI intervened, and that was stopped. And Bill Clinton and Obama. And finally we get to Biden. And Biden, there was pressure put on him from all over the world. Almost every tribal nation here in the United States filed for my release, demanding my release. The United Nations. The United Nations did a full report on my case, and they demanded that I be released immediately and to be paid, quote unquote. Hundreds of Congress and senators and millions of people.
Then the Pope.
And the Pope, the last Pope and the current Pope. And world leaders, many world leaders demanded my release.
The Nobel Peace Laureate, Archbishop Desmond Tutu?
Yes, I was also nominated nominated four times because of my work from prisons for a Nobel Prize. And the board and everything granted it, but somebody intervened again. So four times I lost that. I think somebody was pushing Biden to stop any possibility of signing a pardon. So he didn't sign it until the last moment. And actually, a day and a half before he actually signed it and his term was completed, I just took that position that, nah, he's not going to do this. And I just kind of laid back in my cell and I thought to myself, well, I guess I die here. And this is the only ultimate sacrifice I can make. And I have to accept it. I have no other choice. And as I laid there and thinking about it, other people came by, even guards, they said, would tell me, don't give up, Leonard, don't give up. And other prisoners, and some of them prisoners were telling me that, Leonard, he's got to know that if he doesn't sign this is political suicide for the Democratic Party, because there's millions of people that are going to break away from this if he doesn't. And so I was laying there and I was thinking, well, let's try one more thing. So I called a representative of mine that was working closely with the Biden administration. We had Native people in the administration. who were communicating with Biden. And I said, tell him to give me a commutation on my sentence and home confinement. So she called and did this, and that's what I ended up with. And that's what I'm living under right now.
How did you hear that you were going to be free?
It was kind of unbelievable in the immediate moment. I thought somebody was just playing games at me, and I thought, I'm going to wake up and this is all a dream. And I'm in this cell, and I'll be in there. And I really didn't believe until, actually, I walked in the house here.
What was it like to leave Coleman?
Well, imagine living in a cubicle larger than some people's closets for all those years, and they finally are able to walk out of there. I mean, it was unbelievable that this was actually happening to me. But, I mean, the feeling of, wow, I can go, wow, I'll be home. I won't be able to, I won't have to go to bed in this cold cell with one blanket. And I won't have to smell my cellie going to the bathroom. I won't have to eat cold meals. Is this really over for me? Is this really going to be over for me? And it was disbelief. A lot of it was disbelief, really.
And now we're sitting here in your living room, surrounded by the paintings you did in prison.
Yes.
You are an artist extraordinaire. Maybe about to have a gallery showing in New York. Through the years, you sold your paintings. Mm-hmm. Talk about painting in prison and how you came to be a painter.
Well, see, a lot of people think we were allowed to paint in our cells and stuff. We were not. We were not allowed. They had an art room, hobby craft area, and one of the hobby crafts was painting. So you have to sign up for that. A lot of people think that all the art supplies was given to you by the prison, the hobby crafter. That's not true either. We had to buy our own. And I went and signed up immediately to go into the art hobby craft. And I used to go there every day. And that's what I did. I painted and painted and painted until I was able to create my own style and everything. Yeah.
Can you see your paintings now?
No, I 2 months ago, I think now, I lost 80% of my vision. And I'm in the process of hopefully get my eyesight returned, treated and returned.
We're spending the hour with the indigenous leader, longtime political prisoner Leonard Peltier. He was released from prison after nearly 50 years behind bars. It was his birthday weekend that we sat at his home in Belcourt, North Dakota. Coming up, he talks about being put in an Indian boarding school as a child, his activism, and more.
And life will flow as long as the grass grows and the water runs. And while I'm here on earth, I rejoice and it's worth. 'Cause street on the street, freedom on the street.
Fire by Chicano Batman in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we continue our global TV radio broadcast exclusive, as we sit in the home of longtime indigenous activist Leonard Peltier in Belcourt, North Dakota, on the reservation. I spoke to him on Saturday, the day after his 81st birthday, and the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Cree Reservation. He was released in February from the federal prison in Florida after spending nearly half a century behind bars. So take us back in time. Introduce us to you, starting by saying your name, who your parents were, the nations they were a part of, your family, where you lived growing up.
Okay, English name is Leonard Peltier. I'm 81 years old as of yesterday. My father is a Chippewa Cree from this reservation, this nation right here. I keep saying reservations because it would grow. We was taught from childhood that we are all reservations. We're Indians, and we're not Indians. And this is not a reservation. We made treaties with the United States government, and the Constitution says they shall only make treaties with sovereign nations. So we're sovereign nations. We're not Indians, as they claim to be, as they claim we are. And my mother's from Fort Totten, but again, that's not the real name. The real name is Spirit Lake. And that's of the Lakota, Dakota people. I was raised majority of my life here with my grandparents, which is usually the traditional way of my people. The grandparents will take the children and raise them. But when Grandpa died, Grandma had no way to support us. So she went to the agency here to ask for help. And in retaliation, they took us and put us in a boarding school.
What boarding school?
Wapton, North Dakota, 1953. I was there till 1950 for 3 years, 56. And it was extremely brutal conditions.
How old were you?
I was nine then when I went. And
talk about the point of these boarding schools. Was your haircut? Did they stop you from speaking your language?
They did. That was the purpose of the schools, is to take the Indian out of the Indian. Is what they literally was the order. They took us to the boarding schools. The first thing they did was cut all our buzz cut our hair, took it all off, and then we put us and took us into the shower. We showered and we come out of the shower, and we reported all over our bodies DDT. As you know, that's poisonous.
They and poured DDT
they poured
over your body?
DDT with all the cans on your head and the whole body. And then they gave us an issue of clothes, bedding, and assigned us to a bed. And that was the beginning of our treatment. It was extremely, extremely strict school. And beatings were regular for any little violation of those rules. I might have been a little hot-headed, I don't know. But when I first got there, there was a group that called themselves the Resistors. And I immediately joined them, and I became part of the Resistors. So we would sneak behind the gymnasium, and we would talk our language. We would sing some song, even do some prayers. Yeah. And if we got caught, we got the beat out of us.
You wrote in your book, Prison Writings, My Life is My Sundance, that you consider these boarding schools your first imprisonment.
Yes, it was. I found the rules more restrictive than when I ended up in prison.
So you go to this residential school with your cousin and sister for 3 years. Where do you come back to? And how did you maintain your language and your culture?
Well, I came back here to live with my father. And they were still living in log cabins. No electricity, no running water. We had to haul water, we had to haul wood, and we only had $55 to live on, which was my father's World War II military benefits. And that's what we had to live on. And we were facing the time of termination. The United States government wrote a bill passed by Congress, signed by the president, of termination. In 1956 was supposed to be completed by 1985. And